The following is a CA original.
The mighty sound of the South. Tailgating on Tiger Lane. Time 3 at the Liberty Bowl. Each one a Memphis football tradition. This is the Tiger Football Podcast.
What's happening, Tiger football fans? We are back for another edition of the Tiger Football Podcast. I'm Mark Giannotto, commercial appeal sports columnist. I'm joined, as always, by Evan Barnes, our Tiger Tiger football beat writer.
I'll take another job. You,
yeah, no, big hiccup there. But coming to you on the heels of a big, big win for the Memphis Tigers over Mississippi State, 31-29 at the Liberty Bowl this past Saturday. Memphis moves to 3-0, gets its first win over Mississippi State since 1993. All sorts of just a really great game to be at. The crowd was awesome. The game was just super dramatic. And it ended in a resounding win for Memphis, and a win the type of win Memphis fans not only can hold over Mississippi State fans, but a win that left Mississippi State fans complaining and whining. It was just, I mean, I had never, Evan, I don't know about you, I had never been on the side of a win for a team, whether covering a team or rooting for a team, where not only, it was like a game where you got all the breaks, where everything played out in your favor, whether it was officiating or whatever. I had never experienced that. And let me tell you, I'm sure there's Mississippi State fans trying to diminish Memphis's win. I thought it made it better, like, to be honest, the way it all played out. So we got a lot to get to in this episode of the podcast. We're going to break down the Memphis-Mississippi State game. A lot of stuff happened. So I want to talk about the stuff everyone's talking about. I also want to talk about the stuff no one or very few people are talking about from that game, what it means for this team, this season, this program, all that. Because coming out of this win, there's a lot of, you know, the Tigers got a lot to play for, and they've shown us quite a bit in these first three games. And then we'll look ahead to the UTSA game this weekend, a game that feels like a trap game, feels like a game against a team that is kind of going to be playing the role Memphis plays against SEC teams. That's kind of the role UTSA is going to have coming into this one, trying to spoil the Tigers 3-0 start, a team that feels it probably deserves a little more respect than it gets. But we got to start with the Tigers, of course, because they don't get the respect they deserve. This latest round of conference realignment confirmed that. And I think while an individual game, an individual win like this, Evan, doesn't change conference realignment, it sure feels good when that's serving as the backdrop, when you come out, look every bit the equal of a SEC team, and then go out and win the game. I guess your initial impressions, big picture, if you will, for this, like, just what it was like watching Memphis pull off this win and what you think it means just for the program to get a win like that against an SEC team.
First off, I think I will admit that I was wrong last week. My prediction was kind of off. I will admit that. But I think this is a game where you're okay with your prediction being wrong because you couldn't have seen this coming. I mean, I think, you know, we'll get to the Calvin Austin play, but there were so many things in that game where I was just like, how is this happening? Like, it looked like Mississippi State was going to run them out of the game in the third quarter, and then they ended up playing on their heels. And then, like you said, they were physical. It was a game the defense had to make plays and showed again that this Memphis team, and for all their flash and for all their flair with being a great offense, when they need to win games with their defense in these kind of games, they've done it. We saw it with Ole Miss. You saw it with UCLA when you were here. And I think it's a good sign because we had questions about this defense after Arkansas State. And the next thing you know, they ended up stopping Mississippi State on five straight possessions to set things up. So I thought they answered some questions. There's still some questions, but like you said, there's a lot still at play this season that can make this a very interesting season going forward.
Well, and I think there's something too playing in the Liberty Bowl at this point. They've won 18 games in a row there.
17, excuse me.
22 non-conference games in a row there. And I think it's just a really tough place to play. Like, I hope this isn't the case. But, you know, if I'm an SEC team, given what Memphis has done here in the past 5-7 years or so, I think they're 6-6 in their last 12 games against Power 5 teams. But we've seen when teams come into the Liberty Bowl, they're not winning. And I think there's something to the home field advantage Memphis has at the Liberty Bowl. I think it's, you know, I think it plays into playing at the Liberty Bowl, plays into just the respect card that Memphis already has at its disposal whenever it goes against these SEC teams, where, you know, most of the guys on Memphis's roster, if they had gotten an offer from Mississippi State, they're probably going to Mississippi State. Like, and they got overlooked. Just like Memphis gets overlooked by the Power Fives. I think, you know, while the X's and O's decide a game like this, I think to dismiss, the motivational aspect of this is silly. I think it plays into how well Memphis plays in these games.
It's pride. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Silverfield said it yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday, but he said they feed into that Memphis versus everybody belief. And granted, he said it before, but there's something to that. When that crowd was getting excited and you heard whoop that playing in the fourth quarter, I mean, there is something about Memphis where they realize, hey, we cannot lose at home. I mean, we saw it last year against UCF. We thought that game was over, and for some reason, Memphis buckled down and won. So I think it's pride. It's pride in just saying, hey, let's settle down, but let's not lose in front of these fans that fire us up.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty of the game, and let's start with the Calvin Austin punt return, because it was the play that won every national highlight of the game showed, okay? Two, it's just a play you'll never see. I don't know if we'll ever see a play like that again. I mean, maybe that's probably facetious, but, like, I don't expect to see another punt return like that in my lifetime, considering I haven't seen one before like that pulled off, certainly at this level of football. Like, maybe in a peewee game or something, you could see it happen, but I don't know if I'm going to see it in a college football game anytime soon. So obviously, you know, unless you've been living under a rock, Calvin Austin, the ball, you know, the ball's down, or Mississippi State thought it was down. Calvin Austin runs in, grabs it, returns it 94 yards, a punt return that, while Memphis was leading, I think really totally swung the momentum of the game, ultimately. I'm not saying Memphis doesn't win without it, but I do think to dismiss it as not, you know, as just, you know, a punt return, a good punt return touchdown, like, that really all confirmed that the momentum in this game had been altered. And I'm curious, Evan, what was your, that it caused quite a bit of controversy, particularly with Mississippi State fans. We got a statement from the SEC Twitter account. Yep. I find it hard to believe if it was the roles were reversed and a call had gone against Memphis that we were going to get a tweet statement from the SEC officiating account. The roles are reversed. And then a day later, we got a statement from the Mississippi State AD, John Cullen.
Big mad, as the kids
complaining.
Say.
And a whole lot of Mississippi State fans basically feeling as if Mississippi State got screwed. What did you make of the controversy, Evan? Did you think the call, obviously they messed up the call. Okay, ultimately. But do you think Mississippi State fans were justified complaining as much as they were?
I mean, if I was a Mississippi State fan, I would probably be upset too, let's be honest, because as the officiating statement said, Memphis had two players wearing number 4 on the field that should have been a penalty. That's indisputable. I watched the TV broadcast. They showed that on the broadcast. So, yes, that should have been called. However, things like that happen all the time in games. You know, there are so many games in college football where the refs make a mistake and you got to just say, all right, game on, right? We can go through the history of that. The point is, Mississippi State touched that ball from going in the end zone. It was down. They did not pick it up. Calvin Austin wisely saw that ball was live, squirted his way in and squirted out, and nobody was going to touch him. I think if I was a Mississippi State fan, I'd be upset. But also I would say that even if the refs had blown that play down, as a player, you have to say, just for insurance, let me grab this ball and give it to the referee. And a lot of Memphis players were on Twitter and bringing up that same point. I think Dre Clark mentioned it as well. So I think, to me, they can be mad, but guess what? The play happened. Mississippi State had chances to win that game, and they did not win that game. We could probably get into it. I'll just say this. The fourth down stop by Quindell Johnson, had Mississippi State kicked that field goal instead of go for it, they would have won the game. Had Mississippi State got those two-point conversions, we're going to overtime. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can be mad at a lot of things, but Mississippi State made some mistakes as well that hurt them too.
Well, I would make the point that, one, I appreciate the fact that they're upset because, one, means the loss hurt them, okay, first of all, if you're a Memphis fan. And two, I just think it makes it better. It makes it sweeter if you're a Memphis fan. Like, we got one over, finally. After, you know, it feels like Memphis is the one who's always on the opposite ends of these things where, an officiating error ends up costing them or something, you know, something out of their control ends up costing them. And, you know, I appreciated the fact that, a little karma coming Memphis's way.
Hey, I'm sure people will sit around talking about 2018 when Daryl Henderson's touchdown should have been a touchdown instead of called back. So, hey, why not?
Against UCF. And then the Magnifico catch in 2019.
Exactly.
Although that one I thought got repaid with the missed field goal in the Tulsa game. But regardless, I thought that made it fun. But so let's get into the actual football a little bit outside of the controversy. You mentioned that sequence that kind of turned the game. Memphis was getting, you know, manhandled's the right word, but Mississippi State had complete control of the game at half when we went into halftime. They're up 17-7. Memphis's only touchdown is that scoop and score by Sanchez Blake to start the game. Mississippi State's moving the ball down the field. I don't know if at will's the right word, but doing whatever it wants, it seems like, particularly through the air, dinking and dunking Memphis to death. Although I think that was part of the plan, and we can get into that as well. But then there's that sequence in the beginning, midway through the third quarter, where Hennigan throws his first interception of his career and then makes the tackle to save a touchdown. And probably, frankly, in retrospect, save the game for Memphis. Because I think if as you point out, if Mississippi State, one, if they kick a field goal there, obviously that's the difference in the score. But I would argue in that moment, and even in retrospect, I got no problem with Leach's decision to go for it on fourth down there because he had been moving the ball at will, and a touchdown would have put Memphis away for all intents and purposes in that situation. He was going for the kill shot. They just didn't execute it. And so Memphis takes over after fourth and goal at the 2. Quindell Johnson, as you noted, makes the – I think it was a pass breakup.
Yep, deflected down the pass.
And then Memphis takes over at the 2-yard line and has its best drive of the game, goes down the field 98 yards. Now, we should note, Hennigan at one moment threw a pretty terrible interception that got negated – by a Mississippi State illegal substitution penalty. A defensive lineman didn't get off the field quickly enough. But you could argue, you know what? Maybe Hennigan recognized that and snapped the ball quickly. I haven't gone back and watched that specific play. But again, you don't complain when you catch a break. You just don't, you know. And then in addition to that, Hennigan goes and converts a 4th-and-8 on that drive. And they go down and they score. And it changed the momentum of the game. It really did. Made it 17-14. Just a key sequence in the game that, one, sparked the defensive turnaround because the defense gets that stand after Hennigan throws the interception. They turn the ball over on downs, Mississippi State does. And then after that, Memphis forces 4 straight punts after. The defense totally righted itself and really, I thought, did a nice job down the stretch. What did you think? You sort of pointed to that sequence when you were talking about the key sequences. What to you was a takeaway from how Memphis responded there?
I thought that was a veteran defense basically saying, we're not going to give up any more of this. We're going to buckle down. And I thought, to me, as I wrote in my piece about the defense after the game, it showed that this defense, maybe they're going to give up a lot of points. They're going to give up a lot of yards. But if they can make timely plays like what they did in that sequence, then who knows what can happen, because all you need is for this defense to keep you in the game and make enough plays and hopefully get some takeaways, which, again, they didn't get any after those four punts, but that was a strong enough stand where that kept them in the game. So I thought, like you said, that sparked them, and it really, even though the offense couldn't score right away afterwards, they kept them in the game, and that's all you needed at that point.
Yeah. What was interesting what the defense did, because they, by and large, rushed only three guys.
Right.
Morris Joseph dressed but didn't play, so you didn't have your best D lineman. They blitzed strategically, but it didn't feel like they ever brought more than five guys at the quarterback. They blitzed, but it was like blitzing a guy, you know, a fourth rusher or maybe a fifth rusher.
Right.
And it was like on a strategic third down or something like that. It wasn't. And then they were playing almost entirely zone coverage in the back end. And clearly the goal, they basically seem to be conceding the pass rush, saying, we're not, you know, this team likes to dink and dunk. You know, the misnomer with Leach's offense is that, you know, he scores this air raid. It's, you know, it's up and down, you know, it's deep throws. And there's some, but a lot of times it's crossing routes and slants and things like that. It's the big plays are short passes that turn into big plays a lot of times. And Memphis's philosophy defensively seemed to be, all right, we're just going to try to keep them in front of us as much as possible. We're going to be willing to give up 5 yards in order to not give up 25 yards. That's what it felt like to me. And it was some people were complaining about the strategy. I felt it was a concession by Mike McIntyre that we're not going to generate much of a pass rush. Like, whatever we do here, like, we're just not, we don't have that type of personnel right now. Like, they didn't generate a pass rush in the first two games. And we're probably not going to do it in this game. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, because it did work in the second half. I mean, ultimately, they were able to slow down Mississippi State when they needed to. And they got, I thought the secondary did much better. They did give up, you know, that drive. They gave up a drive late where Mississippi State scored entirely too easily when they were down 8 late. Okay. And then when they're down, what was it, 31-23, I think?
Yeah, and then they scored in 2 plays on their last drive.
Yes. You know, and there were some 50-50 balls that they got the short end of, but, like, Greg Rubin played well again. And, you know, it felt like the secondary stabilized a little bit after that Arkansas State disaster. And I think, to your point, Evan, you know, it felt like the type of performance you go, okay, they could be good enough. They could be good enough. You know, that they're more like what we thought. Maybe they're not quite the defense we thought they could be, because they aren't generating a pass rush, and the secondary doesn't feel quite as good. You know, they have experienced defensive backs. I don't know how many good, like, it feels like Ruben and like Ruben's pretty good, but he's a true freshman. Jacoby Francis, you know, has played a lot, but it feels like he's had better games than these first three games. And then Quindell Johnson, I thought, played well in the red zone, made 2 keys. I mean, he kind of spearheaded that comeback, him and J.J. Russell. I mean, Quindell was the one who, as you mentioned, made the pass break up on fourth down, also was in on the tackle on the 2-point conversion late to hold that ended up being, you know, saving the team from Mississippi State tying it again. But I think the jury's still out on the defense, but boy, that second half was an encouraging step forward for them. And my question to Ryan Silverfield this week, and he didn't really answer it, he's probably playing his cards close to the vest, was what they did in that second half, was that more tailored to Mississippi State, or did they hit upon something that they can use moving forward as a defense? He said it was a combination of both and wouldn't go into details. I do think we're going to see more of that zone coverage, though. We saw when they played man, they were susceptible to getting beat by Arkansas State's receivers, whereas it just seemed like they were able, you know, yes, they gave up a lot of, you know, 5 to 7 yard passes, checkdown passes, but they weren't getting beat deep like they were against Arkansas State in the second half.
Yeah, I think so. And I'll be really curious how that works, because I do think that when you go to the AAC, you need to kind of have a better pass rush. Like, we've seen what those teams can do lighting it up. And I don't think, let's say SMU, for example, I don't know if that's going to work against them. I don't know how it's going to work against UCF, although we'll see where they are with Dylan Gabriel, which we'll probably get into. But I think it worked, and it's worked these last two games in a way. But I feel like it's a lot of trust in that secondary and a lot of distrust in that pass rush. And I don't know if that's a good recipe, because we've seen this team, when they've gotten made deep runs, like 2017, they had Jannard Avery. You saw that team. 2019, they had Bryce Huff and JoJo Zuercius and those guys who can get a pass rush too. I don't know if that's sustainable, but if it's going to work right now, it might.
Look, they don't have their best D lineman. I mean, Morris Joseph hasn't played the last two games, so that hamstrings them a little bit. I think it's going to be an issue. I think they're going to – that defense is going to be the type of defense where I don't think we're going to remember it as dominant, but maybe they can, you know, duct tape things together like they did against Mississippi State. I mean, that's what it felt like. Because that's the thing that's remarkable about the game. Memphis won 31-29, but I mean, maybe some fans will disagree. Like, I don't think this taints the win whatsoever, but, like, frankly, like, who looked like the better team in terms of offense, defense? It was Mississippi State. But, like, that doesn't matter. I mean, Memphis made the big plays when it needed to, and it's not a seven-game series like in basketball, like in the NBA. It's a one-game scenario, and what matters is who's on top at the end of the day. But, like, it underscores the fact that, like, ultimately, like, for instance, the Memphis offense had a, frankly, objectively, a pretty poor performance against Mississippi State. Yeah. They did enough to win the game. They came up with that 98-yard drive when it mattered. And then, you know, they had two or three chances to take the lead before they actually did, which underscores, again, how the defense played in the second half. But finally, I think it was the third chance to take the lead. They got the ball at the 36-yard line. And after a nice, I think it was a Calvin Austin punt return, maybe, or just a poor punt by Mississippi State. And I thought had the two best play calls, certainly of the season, to score, maybe even of like the Kevin Johns, Ryan Silverfield era, where first on third down, I believe it was 3rd and 8, one of the only 2 third-down conversions Memphis had all game. Seth Hennigan walks to the sideline as if he's getting an audible, you know, like how they look to the sideline getting audible. And then they direct snap it to Brandon Thomas, who gets the first down. And then on the very next play, they do like a fake Hennigan, like does a fake rollout to his left, which he had done unsuccessfully, rolled out to his left unsuccessfully early in the game. Takes like 1 or 2 steps, then turns immediately to the other side of the field and hits Calvin Austin on a wide receiver screen. And I think it was Austin and an O lineman and just one Mississippi State defender between them. And Austin waltzes into the end zone. 2 awesome play calls, just like well executed, well timed. But like that was it. That's all the offense did. That 98-yard drive and then that. That's really what the extent of the Memphis offensive attack was on Saturday. And I guess what I would ask you is, how much of it was, you know what, they were going up against an SEC defense that was pretty darn good, and how much of it is concerning to you moving forward?
I'm going to go ahead and say Mississippi State gets more credit for that, because we thought this would be a game where Seth Hennigan was going to struggle just because of the physical front. We didn't think Memphis was going to run the ball that much against Mississippi State having like 2 big tackles in there. I will credit Mississippi State, because this was probably the game we thought Seth Hennigan would look like a freshman. And at times he did. But it says a lot that, again, he led that 98-yard drive. And the weirdest stat that I kept looking back at when I looked over the game, after his interception, he completed his six passes in a row after that. Mm-hmm. Then after that,
he did have an interception in there that got negated.
Right, taking that out. But after that, he completed six straight passes. Then after that 4th-and-8 conversion, he only completed 2 passes the rest of the game. Both of them were touchdowns to Calvin Austin. It's a strange stat line. And you look at the numbers and you're like, yeah, this offense was not good. But Calvin Austin got it done. Brandon Thomas was physical and got it done. I thought this was a game where they had to kind of grind it out and Hennigan had to not make more mistakes than what he did with those 2 throws.
Ultimately,
and I was going to say, yeah, and he did. He didn't make, he was good enough running the offense. And again, on that touchdown throw to Austin where he did that throwback screen, he easily could have gotten happy feet and made a mistake, but he was stood in there, turned around, threw it, and it worked out.
Ultimately, he was not a detriment to the team. Sometimes when you're playing a true freshman, he'll have a game where he throws 4 picks and he just loses you the game because he throws 4 picks. While Hennigan was not great, like, he was not a detriment to the team. And it gets me to the larger point that I made in a column up at commercialappeal.com. It plays into it. Like, I just think these first 3 games, and especially this game against Mississippi State, kind of highlighted that, you know, ultimately it's going a lot smoother than you expected with a new quarterback. Like, it just looks... I'm sure there's some fans listening to this who said, I knew it was going to be like this. You know, I knew we were going to beat Mississippi State. I had faith the quarterback situation would be fine. And those fans listening, more power to you. I need to find out what next week's lottery number is.
You and me both. Let's be honest.
But I didn't expect it to go as smoothly as it has through 3 games. And it got me thinking, kind of what the Ram, yeah, as you survey what Memphis has in front of it now, and you look around the AAC, like, I'm not saying Memphis is an undefeated team. I'm not even saying they're the best team in the AAC. But it feels like the first 3 weeks, if we were to put a percentage chance on, we said before the season, we felt like the ceiling for this group was, you know what, we think they can make the AAC championship game if their cards fall into place. And I would put the chances of them doing that, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen or even likely to happen, but I think they've increased the chances of themselves being the second best team in the AAC. These first 3 games have kind of shown to me, the first 3 games have encouraged me to think this is possible. Like, they are potentially the second best team in the AAC. And with the way the schedule shakes out, where you don't have to play Cincinnati this year, I mean, you look at it, they got you. We'll talk about UTSA in a second, but that doesn't factor into going to the AAC championship game, but that's going to be a tough game. But then you've got, after that, Temple, Tulsa, and Navy, none of whom have won a game yet. Okay. None of them. They're all winless. UCF just lost Dylan Gabriel for at least the foreseeable future. Likely not
quarterback.
Yeah, likely not going to play when Memphis goes down to Orlando. Still will be a tough game in the bounce house. But, like, certainly looks more winnable now with Dylan Gabriel injured. SMU needed a Hail Mary to beat Louisiana Tech, a team that Mississippi State almost lost to, we should note, in week 1. But you get them at home at the Liberty Bowl, a place you haven't lost in 3 years. Okay, so that's nice.
Right.
Tulane... Houston, well, that's a road game, and if you look at Houston's schedule, they avoid both Cincinnati and UCF this year. But Houston, when they had a game against a middling Power 5 team, kind of like Mississippi State, they played Texas Tech. They lost by 2 touchdowns. Okay, so in a similar type matchup, Memphis won. Houston lost by 2 touchdowns against a Texas Tech team. Again, not a win. But again, I think you feel better about it 3 weeks into the year than you did when the season started. Tulane, Ole Miss would still be scoring on them right now if Lane Kiffin hadn't called up the dogs. Gave up 60 points and a half to Ole Miss. And I guess the point I would make is that it just feels like Memphis is capable of pulling it off. I wasn't sure if they were before the season. Now I feel sure. Like, ultimately, that Mississippi State team's probably going to finish 4-8, something like that. But might be the worst team in the SEC West. I got news for you. If that Mississippi State team was in the AAC, they'd be one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the league. and challenge for an AAC title. And Memphis just beat them. That's how I look at it. I really think, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I certainly think it feels like it's more likely that this could be more than a transition year than maybe, again, people listening may not have thought of it this way, but I sort of thought of this as more of a transitional year to great things a year from now. But it feels like if things fall like they did Saturday, this could be a lot more than a transitional year.
Yeah, I mean, you broke it down so well, I almost don't know what to say, honestly, because I think, to be real, like, I thought that I wrote what I wrote was this defense is good enough to keep for them to contend for the AAC. And everything you said is pretty much why I think the AAC is going to be really interesting. Just to get to the championship game, because I think Cincinnati is still the best team. Regardless of what happens when they play Notre Dame, that's still the best team in the AAC, and all roads go through them. But with Memphis, I don't see why not. Like, this could be a year where, again, they weren't expected to be a top three team in the AAC. They have a schedule that was pretty favorable before the year started, and it looks pretty favorable now. If everything breaks well, who's to say they can't go back to the AAC championship game? Like, even if they lose to UCF and they beat everybody else, a one-loss AAC team probably can get in if UCF loses again. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen, but I would just say that Memphis, is it too early to say they control their own destiny? Maybe not, but I think this team's ceiling.
It's definitely too early for that.
Right. But I would say, too early. But I would say that
I honestly think the biggest threat is Houston, actually, because Houston doesn't have to play UCF or Cincinnati this year.
And last year's game was tricky because Memphis should have won that game by a lot, and Houston came back and won. And we know those games are always screwy a little bit. I think it's possible. Now, am I worried about some of these road games in October? Yes, we'll get to that when we get to it. But I am a little bit worried about Tulsa a little bit. But
yeah,
Memphis, the ceiling for this team just got raised a little bit to where, hey, if all breaks well, maybe, just maybe, this team could surprise a lot of people around the country, not just in the AAC.
And the point I would make to close it out is they are not – I don't think there is a team on their schedule left who is clearly better than that Mississippi State team they just beat.
No.
There's no one left on the – like you could argue – maybe you can argue at UCF is a tough game. You know, at Houston's going to be a tough game. SMU's going to be a tough game. I don't think it's going to be any tougher than that Mississippi State game was. I really don't. That Mississippi State game could have gone either way. I'm not saying they're definitely going to win, but if they can beat Mississippi State, they can win every game on the schedule. I really firmly believe that.
Going bold, Mark. You're going bold with it.
I'm not saying they will. I'm saying they're capable of it. Including this weekend's game against UTSA.
Let's get to Saturday.
Which is a much more intriguing game now. Just like Memphis, a much more intriguing team now than it was when the season started. UTSA is also undefeated. And to the point that, I don't know if you saw this, Evan, over at ESPN.com, Bill Connolly, who does their SP Plus rankings, kind of the mathematical computer formula stuff, he had a story earlier this week that had like bold predictions for the rest of the year based on the first few weeks of the college football season. And one of those bold predictions was UTSA will play in a New Year's Six bowl game. That was one of his bold predictions. And the basis of it was he thinks this UTSA team could potentially go undefeated. And if Cincinnati loses to Notre Dame, then an undefeated UTSA could potentially represent the group of five in a New Year's Six Bowl. That's how highly he thinks of them. That's what the numbers think of this UTSA team, who already won at Illinois earlier this year. So what do you, Evan, make of this matchup with UTSA? What can you tell us about what's their mascot?
The Roadrunners.
The Roadrunners. Beep, beep. What can you tell us? What do you make of this matchup with Memphis and UTSA?
All right. So I think this game is going to be fun. I think it's going to be a game that people around the country might tune in and see kind of this group of five battle, because UTSA is, like you said, a program fighting for respect. They beat Illinois in Illinois already, so they got some stripes from that. And they see Memphis as a team that says, hey, we want to be just like Memphis. We want to beat Memphis. We want to prove ourselves. So this game is going to be a fun one to see kind of how Memphis can stay focused, which I think they will, but can they stay focused against a UTSA team that's basically what Memphis may have been 4, 5, 7 years ago? So I think this game is going to be interesting. Like, to quote Zorfield, preseason All-American running back and Sincere McCormick, they're big up front. They got four guys in the middle, excuse me, four linemen that are over 300 pounds, 340-pound left guard, 335 center and right guard. Their defense, their 10th in total defense, their 19th in run defense. This is a physical group. This is a group that seems like it's been building for a year where they can kind of surprise and make some noise. So I don't think Memphis is taking them lightly, and I don't think that this game is going to be a game that Memphis should win easily. We even see the line proving it. So I think it's going to be a really physical, fun game that I think Memphis will have to basically stay focused and be ready for. Because if they mess up, they can easily see this home winning streak end.
Yeah, UTSA number 10 in the country in total defense, I think.
Yeah.
I'm glad this game's at the Liberty Bowl. I think that's the best way to probably put it. This would be really troubling. And I mean, listen, like you said, I think they're going to have to play well to win the game. It's funny. It's like I mentioned at the top, it's kind of the same dynamic Memphis and Mississippi State had, in that, you know, there wasn't much for Mississippi State to gain from beating Memphis. Just a lot to lose, and there was a ton for Memphis to gain. I think it's the same dynamic in this game. Not a lot for Memphis isn't going to get the credit they probably deserve for beating a team of UTSA's caliber, just like Mississippi State wouldn't have gotten the credit it deserved for beating a team of Memphis's caliber if that had happened. And for Memphis, I think losing to UTSA, you know, could be, certainly if Bill Connolly's prediction comes true and it like propels UTSA to like a sort of position in the rankings where they could threaten to take away the AAC's berth in a New Year's Six Bowl, it could be costly for Memphis. So very interesting matchup, and it's a game, you know, UTSA is trying to build its program. They're going to try and use Memphis to, as a stepping stone, if you will, or like a, maybe not a stepping stone, cause they won't be above Memphis in the pecking order, so to speak, but just as hang a head on their wall. So just like Memphis just hung a bulldog on its, over its fireplace. That's kind of the dynamic at play here. So should be a really interesting game at the Liberty Bowl. I don't know if I hope it's as good as exciting as the Mississippi State game. Because that was just a heck of a lot of fun. But it was only fun, I think, frankly, partly because Memphis won the game. So
you didn't like the crowd, Mark? The crowd wasn't great?
So we shall see. Things are getting interesting, though, with Memphis football. We'll have tons of coverage over at commercialappeal.com leading into the game and post-game. Let's see how the Tigers run. This is a classic trap game. Feels like a classic trap game for Memphis, and let's see how they handle this after handling the challenge from Mississippi State.
Don't be Wile E. Coyote against these Roadrunners.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go. Nice. Nice. All right. Well, till next time, I was Mark. I was joined by Evan Barnes. We will see you next week. Till then, beep, beep.
Tiger Football Podcast is a production of The Commercial Appeal.